Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
And welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the only rugby podcast that was on the Bears' side in the Revenant. I am, as ever, Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me. Call me whatever you want to call me. I'm joined as
okay,
ever by...
Okay, Connor, that's your new name.
Thank you. I'm joined as ever by David or Will or...
My name's Will Owen. I don't usually tell people they can call me whatever they want. You always do, so I'm finally going to take you up on that. And your name, it was Connor a minute ago. Mm. Now it is Andrew.
And thanks, Will, and nothing else. And also delighted to welcome to the podcast for the first time, Mr. And now we've just been talking about pronouncing your surname, so I'm suddenly very aware of how I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to screw it up. But from La Rouge podcast and Layman Sports, we are joined by Derek Brissett.
Hey, you nailed it. You nailed the pronunciation, Andrew. You nailed it. It was perfect.
You were just telling us before we came on air that you've had quite a lot of really exotic pronunciations of your name. Do you want to talk us through some of those?
Yeah, I guess. I was saying it's like the one that kind of caught me off guard the most was Bruchette, which like I said was during a hockey game when I scored a goal and they had to announce the goal. And it really threw me off just sitting on the bench. Kind of, I'm like, I have no idea where the C came from out of my last name. But I think some of the ones that you guys were trying before, like Bracetti and stuff like that, I get that pretty off. That's a more of a common one. But yeah, there's always, I think like the double S's, the double T's, the far too many E's kind of always make for some kind of fun pronunciation sometimes. But you nailed it this time, though. So
thank you.
I have no complaints.
I'll try and keep it up. Can I just follow up? So you played hockey. I believe you play Aussie rules as well.
That is an adventure and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. You're involved in rugby. How many sports are you kind of floating around?
That's a wide skill set, man.
Yeah. It's kind of weird how it's weird that they're all kind of like interconnected, though. Mm. So I actually, like, I started playing rugby in high school, which is kind of, I think, the typical way most Canadians kind of get introduced to it, unless you had like a parent or an older sibling that was playing like before you. But like, so kind of got introduced into rugby, quite frankly not very good at rugby, so I've kind of gone more of like the fan approach to it than
know all about that.
Yep, same.
Fair enough. Yeah, so then I was kind of like love sports despite my sheer lack of athletic ability, though. So I kind of through like I played hockey, but like I went to there's a school here called Brock University. It has a sports management program, so I went to that program, and while I was doing that, I started working for an OHL team, which is like, it's an under 20 league, but it's kind of like the stepping stone to get to the NHL, right? So kind of just like a development system, right? And then from that, I ended up working at the Hockey Hall of Fame, which is downtown Toronto. And through that, I met my friend Robbie Cameron, who started Layman Sports and was just like, do you want to write for this? And I was just like, yeah, sure. This sounds like a fun thing to kind of do. And then basically I started writing about rugby on it because my thought process was like, there's so many, and at least in Canada, there's so many outlets that are focused on like hockey or like baseball, basketball, football, soccer, all like the sports that are like the big five sports here. Right. And MLR was just kind of starting up. And coincidentally, the Arrows were just founded like around that same time. So I was like, oh, I'll start like writing for like the Toronto Arrows. And that's how, and then that just kind of like blew up for me a lot. And that kind of evolved like from the articles to like the podcasts and stuff. But then also one of the guys I worked with at the Hockey Hall of Fame named Mike, and he basically he was like, oh, like I play on an Aussie rules football team that like just needs bodies, basically. And he was like, you also like, you like rugby. It's kind of like rugby. It's like, you should come out and try it. And I was like, all right, like, why not? Did the first training session, realized he's never seen a rugby match in his life to understand what rugby would look like. That's, I feel like the similarities between like Aussie rules football and rugby are like the ball is kind of oval shaped. There's grass and you can hit people, which that's about where it ends. But like, and it just ended up being a whole lot of fun. So now I kind of stuck with it. Yeah. So it's all kind of weirdly interconnected. So
yeah. That's great. So are you a better Aussie rules footballer than you were a rugby player?
I'm not good at either one of them, really.
Well, paint us a picture of what kind of rugby player you were. What position did you play? Give us a very basic profile.
Yeah, so I was, so when I started playing, my high school, where I got introduced to it, was in their first year of ever actually having a rugby team.
Right.
So very interesting kind of experience, because it was like 25 to 30 guys that all like never played rugby before,
right? Yeah.
And for the most part, like barely watched it or were even aware of it for a lot of people. So got to kind of like learn through that. So because of that, there's a lot of like experimenting with trying to figure out where people are going to fit position wise. So kind of I was mostly a forward, kind of bounced between front row and second row, sort of depending on like who was available for a game or just like you would switch positions like multiple times in a game too or whatever. So it's kind of just the way that ended up working out. So I played mostly like front row, second row. Got told by a lot of the arrows that I'm way too short to be a second row, so maybe I might stick with prop if I do return to a rugby pitch.
That's very harsh. The professionals to tell
you. Yeah, it's like, what position did you play? I was like, I was a lock. And it's like, you're too short to do that. I'm like, that's why I have a podcast. I'm not playing.
Yeah, how tall is your microphone?
it's like, I don't know, like a foot and a half, I guess. It's on a table.
It's too short to be able to do a podcast.
Yeah, look, exactly. We're talking on Zoom, so you could get away with this and just say you're 6'9".
Yeah, exactly. Which is too short to be a prop for, at least for the Toronto Arrows, I guess. They got some big guys there.
Yeah, they've got Michael Jordan playing hooker.
Arrow is pointing upwards. That is how tall you need to be to. They want the CN Tower itself to play.
Yeah,
for
I didn't make the team because they couldn't afford the custom jersey for how big I would be.
Do you want a very boring anecdote?
Yes.
So sure. I went to Toronto a couple of years ago, just before I started the channel, actually. And the only sign of rugby I saw there was crossing the road outside the Canadian Hall of Fame. I saw someone in an All Black shirt, and that was the only sign of rugby I saw the entire time I was there. And so I wonder if there's some sort of connection there.
I don't know. Like, I think, how long ago was that, out of curiosity?
End of 2017, late 2017.
Yeah. So it's like, it is kind of interesting. I think without a doubt, I think like the Toronto Arrows have raised like the profile of rugby within the city for
sure.
That's
good.
Oh, cool.
There's like, if you kind of go, like, I mean, you can find it on like their social media and stuff if you scroll through it. Like, there's like a decent chunk of like bars that'll do like Arrows like watch parties and stuff.
Oh,
now
cool. Okay.
Hemingway's, which is like downtown Toronto, so easy to get to for a lot of people, that's like I think that's like their official one. They do a lot there. And then there's, you know, there's a lot of like other clubs that do like their own individual parties and stuff. And there's Toronto's a big city, so there's a handful of teams that have clubhouses like around in and around Toronto, so you can kind of stumble into that. But so it's like there's definitely that. Those, some of those bars too still do like there's Six Nation watch parties and stuff happening right now.
That's very good.
So it's like it's definitely kind of like the profile and stuff is rising a lot. Like the Toronto Arrows have been, like, I've seen like they've been buying like some ads and stuff in like some of the, like the major newspapers, or like you can occasionally see like a billboard or something for it if you are around, which is nice. And yeah, so it's like the profile is definitely growing. I think the biggest one though is that the Arrows are on TSN in Canada, which for anybody that doesn't know, it's like in Canada there's two major sports stations. There's TSN and Sportsnet, and you know, depending on I guess which sports you do enjoy watching more, they like kind of, you might gravitate towards one a little bit more than the other sometimes. But So the Arrows are on TSN, which is obviously like a huge platform for them, but it's also nice because it's like most bars in the city just turn on TSN and leave it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you can kind of sometimes there's games that are on there, but it's also like rugby's becoming, I guess, a lot easier to watch in Canada legally too. Like, I mean, you can always find ways. That you don't get have access to, right? But it's like TSN. So obviously the rugby network for all the MLR games, but then TSN's got the Arrows, but they also have like Super Rugby, and then Sportsnet has the Premiership and the United Rugby Championship. Games don't always necessarily end up on TV, but they'll always be on like the streaming services that are accompanied to them. During COVID, Sportsnet started playing a lot of like rugby games and stuff on TV too, just because there was nothing else to show. All the North American leagues were shut down. Same with TSN. TSN was like replaying Arrows games and stuff when there was like sports were like not, when like North American sports weren't happening. And especially it seemed like across the pond kind of seemed to open up a little bit earlier than us. But so it's like, I definitely think like the profile of the sport is growing. It was interesting. Like if you're saying that you saw like an All Blacks jersey outside like the Hockey Hall of Fame, like working there, that was kind of one of the random like kind of interesting things about the hall is, I guess, like there would always be people from various other countries that would come and want to go to the Hall of Fame just for experiencing, like, you know, it's hockey's Canada, like the sport that Canada's famous for is hockey. And you always end up with like, people would show up and be like, oh, and every now and then I'd be like, oh, that's a All Blacks hat or Springboks jersey or, you know, England, Wales. Like you'd always see like some countries kind of like randomly kind of pun, like, oh, that's like a rugby jersey. And then just I would always just try to like randomly start talking to people about rugby and stuff too. But like, so you would always kind of see it. People would like show up just to like see the museum, even if they like weren't like a hockey fan or anything, to like kind of learn about it. So did shockingly see like quite a bit of it, random like kind of fun like rugby connections to hockey too, like historically. So like when hockey was kind of first becoming a thing, like in the late 1880s, early like 1890s, a lot of the original teams were actually like rugby clubs that were looking for something to do in the winter.
Oh really?
Okay. So they would like have like a hockey team too. A lot of those hockey teams started branching off and becoming like their own thing and stuff, but they would have that. And there, because of that too though, like there's some rules in hockey, like the early days of hockey, that if you look at the old school rule books, you're like, are clearly like you stole that from rugby.
Really?
Because there is that little influence, right? There's like, you used to not be able to pass the puck forward. Was like one of the original rules. You could pass, and that like, but similar to like rugby, like you could obviously, you have to pass forward, but you can kick, or you have to pass backwards, excuse me, but you can kick forward. And it was kind of like the same thing where it's like you can only pass backwards, but like if you were trying to score, you can shoot it towards it, shoot forward. So there was that, and then there was obviously the idea of like the sin bin, like you get a yellow card, you go to the bin, or like you go down to 14 men for 10 minutes. But like hockey has that too, right? If you get a penalty in hockey, you go to the penalty box for 2 minutes, and your team has to play a man down for that time, right? So it's like, and sin bin even is weirdly kind of like an occasional slang term or whatever. Penalty box is the official term, but sometimes like there's, you know, everybody's got kind of got their own like slang and stuff for the penalty box too. So depending on who you're talking to, that sin bin term might even get like thrown out there, but there is a whole bunch of like random that. I saw Al Sharon at the Hockey Hall of Fame one day. So that's other rugby and to like, you know, thing to like squeak in there for, but yeah, you know, there's always some cool random connections when you actually go like digging through some of the old history books. And then I know a lot of guys on like the Canadian national team and like the Arrows also used to, like, obviously a lot of them all played hockey and stuff.
That's really interesting. I never knew any.
Yeah, there's weird connections. Weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know there's any connections, let alone that many. That's pretty like, cool.
It's funny because, like, obviously, like in North America, there's a lot of like, you want the game of rugby to grow. And everybody always kind of goes to like a football comparison and stuff. And it's like, I've sometimes, depending on who I'm talking to, will start comparing rugby to like hockey to be like, because I think there's concepts that you kind of get. Like in hockey, like if you're pinned in your own end, your go-to move is to just shoot the puck down the ice. And I'm like, yeah, so they're pinned in their own end. That's why they kick the ball away.
Yeah.
It's an easier analogy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's like you can kind of see that stuff. And it's like, it's easy to explain like the yellow cards, like I said.
Yeah,
sure. Hockey uses the same concept, right? So
yeah, that's pretty good. Good reference point.
And like, I've been to watch hockey where, you know, obviously the British League, which is not the NHL.
Is that the but, like the Cardiff Red Devils?
Yes.
So we've got the Nottingham Panthers are our sort of local team.
Oh, is that closer to you? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's where we live.
So I've got a friend who's a really big fan of them, and I've been along to watch them with him a few times. And it's, I mean, but my brain does automatically go, oh, well, that's a bit like rugby, because that's kind of the language my brain understands everything.
Yeah, excellent.
So I kind of have done the opposite, but it's fascinating to know there's a reason for that.
Mm.
And it's not just my brain making links that aren't there.
It's weird, a weird part of like the old school like history of hockey, I guess, that there was a small rugby influence. Rugby just didn't lead to like football here. It was
small influence. More influence than you'd think.
A little bit more.
So going back a bit, you know, a bit close to the present day, the game for today is Canada's second World Cup match ever. 1987's game against Ireland. This game finishes 46-19 to Ireland, but that is not a reflection of the game whatsoever.
No. Like, I wasn't aware what the score was of this game. I think I had an inkling that Ireland won the game. Yeah, I think I knew that this was Ireland's first World Cup win. So I kind of went through the game thinking, oh, Ireland are going to pip this in the last couple of minutes, aren't they? Because to give a very generic overview, Canada are still in it with about 9 or 10 minutes to go. It's at 19-all at that stage, isn't it?
With about 10 minutes left. 50 minutes ago, Canada in 19-16 up, and 10 minutes ago it's 19-all.
That's when I turned it off, too.
So did every other Canadian, apparently, including the ones on the field.
Yeah,
so a really bizarre game. Obviously, we'd seen... So, we, having gone through all the other games in this 1987 World Cup, God bless us, had seen both of these teams play before. Mm. Canada had got a really great win over Tonga. Ireland had had a dismal day out against Wales where they played horribly. But Ireland still entered this as favourites. But as the teams were kind of came up on the screen, not knowing much about these players, I kind of looked at it and thought, oh, I kind of fancy that Canada team.
Yeah,
I know. It's a... I love looking back at some of these old games sometimes, especially since like I said, like I got introduced in rugby in high school. So like seeing like some of like the Canadian players on the squad, like Gareth Reese and like Mark Wyatt. Mm. It's cool to be able to like watch like some of these guys that are just like absolute legends in Canada.
Mm.
That,
yeah.
Like, but all, you know, completely played their careers before I was ever like focused on rugby and stuff.
Sure. Right? It's an interesting point actually. So, because obviously like we're Welsh fans, so the 87 players, they will like, they go down in folklore, so we know them.
Yeah.
In Canada, how well did like the news of these players, how well does that travel through time?
Like, I would say like certain guys obviously a lot more than others. Guys like obviously like Reese. I mean, I did mention like Al Sharon come, but obviously not on this team and stuff. There is obviously like in BC where the vast majority of the players on this team are from and was kind of like BC is kind of like the original like rugby like hotbed of Canada.
They have a nice
weather advantage over the rest of the country. But like a lot of the guys being from BC and stuff. So it's like the BC like Sports Hall of Fame has like a whole huge like rugby section in it. If you ever like go out and like kind of visit it or whatever. So that's actually kind of cool. As far as like Gareth Reese, I think is still like kind of a very, I guess, a prominent figure, especially talking about like getting rugby on like TV and stuff. Reese does like a lot of commentary too, whether it's for like, you know, the sevens tournaments or Canadian. I think he did the couple like the Canadian national team like World Cup qualifiers that happened like this past, and he does a lot of those games. He's done a couple MLR games this year too, and he's obviously like works for Rugby Canada as like an ambassador type. So it's like as far as like rugby fandom and stuff, like, you know, like Reese is kind of like the first, like, I guess, like getting introduced to the game. You probably learn like the guys that are on the current team first.
Yeah.
But like Reese is going to be like the first like legend that you like hear about.
Right.
Yeah.
Because because that is him. And then the 91 team, I think, is definitely looked at a lot more fondly getting to the quarterfinal, which obviously has a lot of crossover with this team too. But yeah, like obviously, I think a lot of these guys are like super big in like within the rugby community. Right. But like overall name recognition, like maybe Garrett, like Gareth Reeves, Phil McKenzie does a lot of like CBC stuff. Okay. And so he might be like kind of creeping up there as well, just like general like recognizability.
Interesting.
Like that. Because he does a lot of like, he helps CBC a lot with like the obviously rugby sevens on there. And then like, yeah. And he's got like a whole like fitness company too that
doing
pretty well. So it's like, I think some of the players are like kind of starting to get more recognizable. Glenn Ennis might be more recognizable for a lot of other things too.
Yes. I'm glad that you picked up on this. I'm glad that you know this. So without having to do an introduction, because boy, did we discovered that on this podcast, who Glenn Ennis is. And that was a revelation. We were cheering for the Bear all along.
Yeah. It's not even that he is like a stunt guy. It's that he's a stunt guy in like amazing things too. Like,
Yeah,
like I think he did. He did like because I know like it's actually one of here like a random like rugby movie trivia thing. I don't even, what kind of random category is this? So I don't even know. We can categorize it after. But so Glenn Ennis is a stuntman on the Deadpool movie, in which he plays like a bunch, like he plays like some goons that Deadpool like cuts up with swords or whatever, but he is also Colossus's face. So it's like he did like the mocap for like Colossus's face.
I know where you're gonna go with this. Continue. I know
So he does the mocap for Colossus's face, which is cool because if you go back to the like the older X-Men movies, like starting with like X2 X-Men United, that Colossus is played by Daniel Cudmore, who is Jamie Cudmore's brother. So every on-screen Colossus is a Canadian rugby player.
That's amazing.
I
completely forgot about Daniel Cudmore, like conceptually.
He never played for like representing Canada or anything, but obviously, but like he played with Jamie like through like their club level career and stuff. Like he was a relatively prominent like club level rugby player. He made the representative jump, but every Colossus is a Canadian rugby player in a weird way. Yeah.
For now, Disney have got the rights back, the X-Men. They're going to reboot with Ed Fairhurst as Colossus.
Yeah, there we go. That's going to be like the MCU, the multiverse. When the new Doctor Strange movie comes out, they're going to go through like one of the multiverse dimensions. It's going to be like Canadian rugby team practicing or something.
There's going to be 15 Colossus and it's just like Phil Mack.
Yeah. Sean White. Like,
yeah.
Matt Luka
Colossus with like dyed purple hair. It'll be DTH.
And then... Oh, yes.
That's now a great we're talking. Show. It's a great show, especially now he's in his Giltini's days, you know. It wouldn't surprise me. That was the sort of he's shit doing he tried a to pull thing, off.
Yeah, and he's doing a thing where he's dyeing his hair a different color every month to raise like during the season to like raise money for some sort of charity that I'm blanking on what it actually is. But I'm sure you can find it if you like search up DTH on like any of his social media stuff.
Yeah.
But...
Sure. Yeah.
As I say, every time I've seen DTH play in MLR, he's had a different color hair.
Yeah, different hair. Yeah, he looks like he's loving some life in California.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's having a great time.
He's recruiting more Canadians. There's a lot of Canadians on LA.
Ben Lesage just got over there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he got traded. Yeah, he got traded from the Arrows. They traded him for James O'Neill and a second round pick as well as some cash. And O'Neill's sweet, too, because he's one of the prospects a lot of Canadian rugby fans are excited to have.
Oh, really?
He plays for UBC and he's an unreal flanker. He's just looks to be, so now you kind of get him on the same team with Lucas Rumble, so hopefully it's just kind of Jedi Padawan thing going on there.
Keep an eye on him. To quickly pick up on the Irish team while I mean, it's largely the same team that played against Wales, but they do bring back in Tony Ward fly half.
Yes.
After some layoff. I think he's been out of the team for a couple of years.
He has an interesting game, and we will get to him.
Yeah. He comes back in, had been on a British and Irish Lions tour a few years before this, played one test, was, you know, played for the Barbars how many ever times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then had fallen out of favour.
Yes.
Part of his disappearance from the Irish team, though, was that he went and signed to play for Shamrock Rovers in football, what? Soccer. Yep. So he spent one season at Shamrock Rovers playing, you know, the, like, other
guy. As a pro footballer?
As a professional footballer. Spent one season.
Wow.
He'd previously played like a bit of both, played rugby and football alongside each other at semi-pro level. And then went and swapped codes for a bit for one season, then went back to rugby. And then 3 years later, came back and played for Ireland again.
And is back in the team in the World Cup. It's interesting you say that, because I also heard the commentator say during the game that Brendan Mullin, who's playing outside centre for Ireland, was the current 110-metre hurdle champion in Ireland. and they just put him in outside centre, thinking he could do a job.
Well, Tom Woods, who was on the wing for Canada, was, I think, British Columbia sprint champion at the
yes.
time.
Yes, yeah.
And so
both him and Palmer on the wings could shift as well.
Yeah, there are a lot of kind of multi-sport pedigree going on in this team.
Yeah, yeah, in both teams.
So we talked about Spence McTavish on the previous calendar episode.
Yes, Spike, as they call him.
Yeah, a lot kind of filtering through both teams here.
Yeah, yeah. Another interesting thing before we'll be taking our time to get onto kickoff here. But an interesting point that they made about Roe Hindson, who came into the Canadian team, didn't play the previous game because he couldn't make it out to New Zealand in time. Because he was busy planting 15,000 apple trees.
And they needed to be sprayed.
And they needed to
and
be
so
sprayed.
In order to guarantee that they would grow in time, properly, on time, he couldn't make it out on time.
He couldn't play against Tonga. Season.
Yeah, no, the apple tree has got to get planted. They got to get, you know, it's work that needs to be done. It's
yeah.
Yeah. Roe Hindson was also like a big like multi-sport guy too.
Was he?
Yeah, he played like a couple of things. He apparently got like a rugby scholarship to like the University of Philadelphia of Philadelphia, but hated downtown Philadelphia, so he came home and played rugby.
Fair enough.
Yeah, apparently if Philadelphia was a nicer city, then Roe Hindson might not be playing in this game anyways, regardless of the situation with the apple trees.
Yeah, even nothing needed planting.
There's a parallel world where instead of a statue of Rocky, it's him. In Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly.
So before we get to the kickoff, this game is quite busy on the YouTube. If you watch this game, quite a lot happens before a ball is even kicked. I find it's quite a busy opening couple of minutes on this video.
Yeah,
because we have Grant Nisbet along with Earl Curtin, our friend on the podcast, are the two commentators. And Earl's first thing he notices, he says that, you know, there's a few people here in the crowd. The crowd's not massive. It's mainly Canadian and Irish fans. I'm sure this place will, and I quote this following bit, I'm sure this place will fill up. They played club rugby here at 11 a.m. Once those fellas are out of their showers, I'm sure we'll get another 5,000 or 6,000. Now, at first, when he said that, I thought he meant at that ground. 5,000 or 6,000 people played rugby at 11 a.m.
And we're all now showering together.
Yes.
You've got 5,000 or 6,000 people currently in the shower. More than they're in the stands.
Estimated 5,500 people. So that's what, 2,750 on each team. And look, it's a big game of rugby to stick on that one small pitch.
It's a bit like, I mean, Layla, the game they used to play in Georgia, that then kind of like they modified into a new game, then that just became taken over by rugby because it was a sort of very similar sport.
Sure.
That was a sport played by teams about 200 or 300.
Yes,
that'll
of
be
course.
Roughly organized beforehand as how many do you have? We've got about 300 today. Okay, cool. We'll leave a few at home.
Yeah, sure. The thing is, I did think about
you've
this.
You've got to step up a bit there.
Yeah, I thought about this. So, like, with the standard of rugby back then, I imagine that with 5,000 or 6,000 people on the pitch, there would probably be about as many tackles made as there are in the modern game today.
There'd be about as much space as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, between 3,000 of them, they could probably just about get a man to ground.
you would hope so, too. At least they're showering before coming to the game, though.
That's true.
As opposed to just, you know, leaving the pitch and then coming and then, yeah, that's, yeah. Nobody wants to be sitting next to you for 80 minutes after playing a full game, right?
That's it. Like, Roe Hines has already had to spray 15,000 apple trees. He doesn't want to have to spray down, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 men.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, that's, well, maybe he brought the gear. Maybe it would be efficient. He can line up all 5,000 people at the arena or at this, that stadium, excuse me. And then he, yeah, maybe it's the efficiency. That's why why he was late. He had to get the special plane to come over with all the apple orchard gear.
The equipment, just spraying New Zealand as he goes. They'll love him down there. They'll absolutely love him.
There ought to be a statue in Auckland.
Or Philadelphia. There's also a sign in the crowd. Someone has got a big banner made up that says, "Make them bleed, make them beg, win the game for Winnipeg."
Nobody on the team's from Winnipeg.
That's even better. Yeah. I like the thought that, like, they've got 10 minutes to go, right? And they're in it. They're 19-16 up. And then Hans the Goody has been doing his team talk as Kermit the Frog. And he's been saying, "Hey, guys, we got it. We got to do this. We're playing really well so far. Do it for Winnipeg, as that sign says over there." And they'll go, "We're not from Winnipeg." And then they shit the bed and lose by 30 points.
Maybe that's what went wrong. If they had some place in Winnipeg, they'd have some pride in the jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In fairness, Canadians aren't necessarily very good at sport chants. I don't know what we could have used to rhyme with, like, Vancouver or Toronto, which is where I think where most of the players are from.
Very fair. Little, yeah, like I said, it's
like BC used to kind of like dominate like rugby Canada. So it's like, I think, like, you look through like the first like three or four like World Cup teams, and like most of them are all from BC. Doesn't look like that anymore. Roster doesn't really look a lot more even, but yeah.
Nothing rhymes with British Columbia as well.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Give it a go.
I was going to say, if a lot of these Canadian place names had good rhymes for them, Drake would have used them all by now.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's
a rugby
true.
Chants.
Yeah.
Little known fact is where he got his start was coming up with chants for... He actually did let's go, Canucks, let's go.
Yeah, yeah,
he wrote the Degrassi Junior High rugby team's theme song. So
where it all began for it.
Yeah.
So another thing before kickoff is there's an interesting rugby values moment where because of... political, well, go on.
Well, I mean, yeah, as you say. So I think this is the only time in the Rugby World Cup ever where neither team's anthem is sung.
Yes.
So because of, as you say, because of political tension, so 2 weeks earlier, there was a shootout between the IRA and SAS in, obviously, it was the height of the Troubles in Ireland.
Yes.
Sort of late 80s, early 90s, like really serious stuff. There was a shootout about 2 weeks earlier. In which 10 people, including one innocent bystander, was killed. And you had players on this team from both sides, from all ends, you know, and obviously I'm not the best qualified person to talk about the political situation in Ireland at the time.
Of course.
But it was incredibly tense, and Earl on commentary notes a few times that this Irish team looked very tense. And when you look at the news at the time, it's no wonder. You know, if you look at what was going on in Ireland at the time, it kind of puts all of this in a bit of perspective.
Of course.
And so they opt not to sing the anthem because obviously there are different opinions on whether they should, whether players from the team stand for the anthem and so on. And so Canada, being lovely, decide, well, we won't sing our anthem as well. That's only fair.
Yes. And instead they blast out God Defend New Zealand as a substitute. So there is just an anthem. But yes, anyway, it's a fun moment when they play God Defend New Zealand and everyone looks really confused on the pitch.
Ireland's also just like randomly standing in a circle or some sort. Yeah. Like, they're not like Canada kind of lines up like any team normally would, but like Ireland just kind of is randomly huddled on the other side of the pitch.
It's I'm just a big fan of them. They used it as apparently occasionally in 87, something we've learned doing this. Big fan of it. Don't bring it back. Yeah, so after Ireland singing a rousing version of the anthem, we kick off and almost instantly Gareth Rees has dropped a goal.
Yeah, like within about 30 seconds of kickoff.
Which gives him the confidence to try it 68 more times during the game.
It is like, I think I mentioned this in the podcast before, rugby union manager free has a button you can click. And it means your team, anytime they're in the opposition half, will try a drop goal. And it's like Canada left that on.
Sure. Yeah. Robbie, we've gone back over the 2011 World Cup. There were points, and stop me if you know what I'm about to refer to, but there were a lot of points where this started to remind me of the Fiji against Namibia game from 2011.
Yes.
Where it was every single time Canada get an opportunity, it's like, well, we're just going to take 3 points. Like, I don't care what we could potentially do in the opposition half. We're going to take 3 points. And then Ireland would just score a really easy try down the other end. There only were 4 points at this point, so yeah. It's a much more valid tactic.
Well, like, as we, like, I think, like, watching, I'm pretty confident that Gareth Rees attempts more drop kicks than passes that he has in this game. I'm like, I'm pretty sure.
I think that's genuinely correct. Like, no
yeah,
joke.
Yeah, it's, I think it is. Maybe it's because he's got like a broken hand or broken fingers or whatever. It was just an easier motion.
But in the first half, he did 2 passes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I attempted to count. At some point.
I think thinking about it now, because I watched the game a couple of hours ago, I think he did maybe 2 or 3 in the second half.
No, there's a period of about 5 minutes where he starts passing, and it's kind of, it lasts 5 minutes, just, and then that's it.
It's all in the last 5. I got him. I have him at, he attempts 6 drop goal attempts and makes 8 passes, and one of those passes is intercepted.
Right.
that's my count. I could be wrong. There's, I don't know how much of the official stats.
I think that's, I think roughly that will take, that is correct, you know.
But he also attempts just like 14 other just kicks in play. Yeah. So he kicks the ball more than he passes at the very least.
Yes.
But he tries one drop goal from like 5 meters beyond half at one point. Like just like he's playing like Kobe plays basketball. He's just like, if I touch the ball, I'm shooting. Like, and you know, so it's, as crazy as it is, I know, like you kind of alluded to it earlier, like it's working.
Yeah.
Like the whole time, like it's like, cause yeah, like you said, it's 19-19 with 10 minutes left. The last 10 minutes is, cause like I kind of, it was weird watching this, cause I did look at the score before and I was like, I kind of, I guess, expecting the like a blowout, and then watching, I'm like, wait, how do they score so many points in 10 minutes? Like, what is about to happen? Like, watching this game, but so it's like, I don't know, it worked for them. Like, they were able to hang in the game for a long time because of that strategy.
I was the most, like, the second half when Canada was still in it around the 50 minute mark, and even though I knew the score, I kind of, it's probably the most invested in one of these games I've got from 87.
Sure, yeah, because I was really rooting for Canada.
Yeah, I shouted, oh, go on, at one point when they made, you know, they make a break. Roy Radu, the flanker, makes a little break down the touchline. And I properly got animated and started cheering for them.
Yeah.
Because I thought, maybe it'll be different this time. Maybe it'll be different.
That's still how I watch Canada games.
Oh, I'm really sorry about the current everything.
No, it's all good. All good.
On behalf of Wales, I'm sorry for Kingsley Jones.
Yeah. We really didn't want it to happen.
There's better years to start a Canadian rugby podcast for sure, I think, in history.
It's fine. You're on here now, you know.
Yeah,
looking
exactly.
Back at old rugby games where Canada played well, which is a bit of a novelty in 2022, but hey.
No. This was enjoyable. This was nice to watch an era where Canada can hang with Ireland.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
For 70 minutes.
I was going to say also. So,
like I said, I turned it off before that.
The first minute, Rees hits crossbar on a drop goal attempt, then scores a penalty. Straight afterwards, I want to discuss Kiernan's drop goal because because it's literally so. First phase, Tony Ward playing fly half for Ireland takes it in. Second phase, they go, oh, okay, let's go to the backs again, see what happens. And Kiernan probably has like a, well, my ten's at the bottom of a ruck, so he can't bollock me for this. He can't tell me not to drop kick this because he's not looking. And he goes for it and he nails it.
It's, the world's first teachers out of the classroom drop goal.
Yeah, exactly. Like in an assembly when the head teacher turns his back and you stand up.
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of vibe, but you're scoring points in a World Cup.
And also, why would you, if you're Ireland and you're coming to this game as heavy favourite and like our friend Earl before the game says, this is what's going to happen. Ireland are going to win by a huge scoreline. They will be completely dominant. etc. If that's the expectation on them, and it really hurts that he was right in the end. but if that's the expectation, why are you taking? If it's a penalty, sure, take the shot, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's why would you take a drop goal there?
Because like it had to be a good kick for the kick to go over, and it was a good kick.
It's a bizarre attempt.
Yeah, there's but fun vibes.
Yeah. Then a great tackle on him shortly afterwards as well. He gets smashed by someone, and I didn't know down who it was.
Fair enough.
It's Palmer.
Ah, right.
It's Palmer. Like he just comes flying up off the wing, and yeah, it's a really nice hit.
He has a great game as well, Pat Palmer.
Oh, I know the one you mean now, where he stops the try as well. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Because
there's
Ireland have that early break, don't they, where they look like they're about to score. And you think like, oh, okay, this is the way the game's going to go. But I kind of do a really good job to just shut it down from there and go, no. The narrative of this game will remain just Gareth Rees booting the leather off it, sending you into your half. And like, in that first half, I think Gareth Rees only really shanked one kick into touch because Ireland kept kicking to him on the kickoffs and he was just giving really good replies. And like, to be fair, Wyatt as well was kicking really well, which surprised me after the last game because he shanked a few in that. But Wyatt had a good game as well. But
great moment where Gareth Rees catches the ball after Ireland kick it and Glenn Ennis is nearby. And he just stands completely still because he knows he's kicking it back. He doesn't bother to get behind it for a pass or anything. Just knows what's going to happen next.
Sure.
You got to know what your teammates are going to do to be in the best position and stuff, right?
It's that kind of anticipation that got him ahead in Hollywood, really.
Yeah, exactly.
He then nails another drop goal, Gareth Rees, shortly afterwards. Takes one straight off a scrum as well, which has since been outlawed, presumably because Paul Drogba just watched Gareth Rees and went, hold on, this is bullshit.
There is a point, like, I think it's the next scrum Canada get after, because by this point he'd nailed two drop goals. Canada were packing down a scrum in the middle of the field on the Irish 22, and I literally just wrote in my notes, I wonder what Rees is going to do from this. And lo and behold, he misses a drop goal.
There's one in the second half where Canada have a scrum straight between the posts and he doesn't go for it.
Yeah, and it's really confusing.
Yeah, but he stood very deep anyway.
The thing was, Canada tried to play like two consecutive phases attacking. And then suddenly when they drop the ball, you go, oh, I realise why they were doing what they were doing for the first 60 minutes and just kicking it every single time because Spike dropped the ball.
I think, too, like, after Rees attempts the, like, beyond half drop goal, Earl makes a comment about how it's like, oh, I guess the Canadian backline just doesn't rate themselves very highly to, like, keep playing or whatever, which I was like, that kind of stings, but, like, they are trying drop goals, basically. Like, it got to the point in this game where, especially, like you said, when Rees starts passing at the end of the game, I'm like, oh, like, this is completely different now.
Yeah. And so suddenly there is a period, and this is kind of deep into the second half, where Canada look on top and they suddenly start playing attacking rugby and hold the ball.
And it works.
And you're convinced they're going to score. And eventually they do through Cardinal, the hooker, which is a bit of a fluke try, but like they have worked that position so well.
Yeah, they were unlucky not to score because it was the one where Spillane, the Ireland number eight, makes an intercept like on it, you know, inside zone 22 to prevent a try. And like you're thinking, like eventually one of these has to stick. And you're right.
Yeah.
The try they do score is very jammy, but you take them.
Yeah, I mean, should we go back to the first half while we're doing? Sorry, I've just read one of my notes that's not written very clearly. What I've written, and I've just thrown myself off completely here, is Wyatt kicks dead, right? But what I read it as is Wyatt kills dad. Which would be a very different match if that happened in the middle. Just a murder, just the fullback murder.
Do you want me to just research whether or not he did?
Just
to be on the safe side. Just to fact check.
Canadian fullback, patricide.
Did Mark Wyatt.
Maybe that's how far out into touch the ball went. Took out somebody in the crowd, and then it was still slippery from the shower that they just had. It hit them, they slipped on the stairs, and then that was the end of it.
When you Google did Mark Wyatt kill his dad, the first thing that comes up is Ozark, what happened to Wyatt Langmore's dad Russ? So that's, I think there's no conclusive evidence at the top of Google that Mark Wyatt killed his dad. So okay. Just wanted to fact check that didn't happen, especially during the game.
Do you want,
because it would be quite significant if he did.
Do you want some hot Mark Wyatt facts?
Yes, I do.
Obviously, we mentioned the previous episode, there was a Welsh fullback called Mark Wyatt who didn't make this World Cup, was playing at the same time, played in the Six Nations for them. Still bizarre. This Mark Wyatt was born in Bermuda.
Okay.
But, you know, spent most of his life in Canada. He broke the world record for most penalties in a game, scoring 8 against Scotland when Canada beat them.
Reese was clearly pissed off about that, wasn't he?
Yeah. It held for 10 years, that as a record. I believe Lee Halfpenny holds the record now. I think it's 10, maybe 11.
Yes, he did against Scotland. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, poor Scotland.
it's just
getting lit up with penalties here.
Death by a thousand cuts over and over again. He was also named as one of the top 100 Victoria athletes of the 20th century.
Was he now? I mean, now, I'd love to know who the other 99 are.
Yeah, I don't know, Derek. How big a claim is that? How big is being one of the top 100 Victoria athletes of the 20th century?
Specifically the city of Victoria?
Yep.
Might be huge in Victoria. I don't, who else is on that? Who else is on that list? Is there,
I don't know.
I'm trying to think of other, there's probably a lot of rugby players. There's a lot of rugby players that are actually from Victoria is like, that's close to like the, where Rugby Canada's headquarters and stuff is. They have some.
Right.
So there's a lot of rugby players that are from and live around Victoria, but yeah, so, I haven't seen that. I wonder who else is on that list. I know there's a couple like NHL players that are from Victoria, so I'm imagining they're on that list.
Mm. There's no link to the list.
Does it say how high up on the list he is?
Just says he's one of the 100. So I reckon he's at best 98.
He's in the 90s, yeah.
I was going to say, I'm assuming he's one. I'm going to assume he's one.
Yeah, he's one. Yeah, yeah. Canonically, for this podcast, he is one.
He's
one. In our hearts, he is the best athlete to ever come out of Victoria.
So two other quick facts. Having looked it up, apparently, the most famous person to ever come out of Victoria is Nelly Furtado.
Okay.
closely followed by Mark Wyatt.
Do you reckon Nelly Furtado knows who Mark Wyatt is?
I reckon so, because she's very familiar with that list, the 100 greatest sports
people. Yeah, she clearly is. And she raps about it all the time.
Also, the list isn't just... Oh, is the list athletes or just people from Victoria?
No, it was athletes was the list. Right. But then I've looked up just
but
famous people.
Who knows? Nelly Furtado might be a great athlete.
It's also twinned with Napier, where Canada did not play this game, but is in the same country.
that's a hot fact.
And when you look through famous people born in that city, they are mostly rugby players.
That's less surprising.
Nelly Furtado, let's just command F, rugby on a Wikipedia page, nothing found. That's
That'd be outstanding if we did, though.
That would have been good. That would have been good. But hey, you've managed to put that one out very quickly.
I can tell you she plays the trombone and ukulele as well as guitar and keyboard.
Is she? That's quite good. That's a good array of instruments.
Yep. Performing the Portuguese marching band. She's just a very talented lady. So we also have a try in the first half through Keith Crossan, the Irish winger, which is bullshit.
Sure. Talk us through this, Robbie.
Well, I mean, so Ireland miraculously went a line out, which was quite rare during this game, because I'll tell you what, for all of the time he spent spraying apple trees, Roe Henderson also sprays the ball back pretty well. Him and Hans de Goody completely have the line out locked up.
Yeah.
Because there was such a lottery in this era, just having two really tall men who were very good at like palming the ball back, like basketball restart style, was such a useful skill and just gave Canada all this possession for Gareth Rees to kick away. So Ireland win a line out kind of out of nowhere. And I guess just kind of chug it along until it eventually ends up in Crossan's hands, who looks up, goes, oh no, I'm well marked. I just run at that corner. And somehow no one tackles him.
Yeah, it is complete bullshit that he scores that. Like, they'd already scored that Michael Bradley try where he just snuck over from like 3 meters. And it's like, oh, okay, whatever. But Crossan's, it's just kind of like, well, you're getting smashed into touch here because you have both a winger and a fullback to beat within about 2 meters. Mm. And like, it's not even like they can't be bothered to tackle him yet, of course. there's plenty of room for that later on. But yeah, I think bullshit is the best word for that try.
Like, I want to call it a great finish, and in many ways it is.
Sure.
But it just kind of feels like it shouldn't have happened.
Mm.
Yeah, it's I mean, clearly he just kind of burns, like you said, the fullback. But it's, if you rewatch the try and just watch Mark Wyatt, because it is the loudest. It's the loudest F-bomb that you will never hear, just pure body language. It's amazing. Like, it's like full animated. Like, he is very upset that he let Crossan get by him on that play.
Huge F for Furtado.
Yeah.
And yeah, so as you mentioned, the Michael Bradley try as well, where, as you say, just sort of Ireland are, it's off a scrum, isn't it? Is it?
Line out.
Ireland tap it back and he just kind of goes, all right, and falls over the line.
Yeah.
It's a very low effort try.
Exactly.
Tell you what, Michael Bradley, not very good.
No, I'm not a fan of him.
He throws the worst dive pass I've ever seen in my life. Straight over someone's head. It's hilarious.
It is funny because, like, he's clearly got such a level of precision on that pass in his head. And the level of precision, it is about 3 meters taller than Tony Ward.
Yes.
That would make the Toronto Arrows team, whoever he was trying to pass to there.
Watching that pass there, suddenly what he must have been teaching his teams when he was in charge of Zebra and Connacht made sense.
Yeah. I feel like I've learned a lot about Michael Bradley across these two games we've watched with him. But simultaneously, I feel like I've learned nothing at all. I feel like I knew it all along.
You know what?
Like, I could have guessed this is the player he was.
He was also the Georgian backs coach during the sort of 2011, 2015 World Cups, when you wouldn't know that Georgia had backs.
Yeah, let alone a coach.
You know what? I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot about Michael Bradley as we go.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think that there's not much actually left in the first half because Canada just weather the storm really, really well and keep on them at their half. There's one point, Reese's second pass of the game, he gets it to Mark Wyatt, who has a 2-on-1, and he kicks it. And it's one of those where it's like, if he gets this in the corner, then that's fine.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, and it goes dead. So therefore, not fine. That bumps him down like 5 or 6 in the Victoria top 100 athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a terrible option to kick.
No.
And especially because defences were so weird and floaty then, I don't think this was necessarily a try.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, it's an odd decision. Well, no, it's a decision that doesn't come off because he kicks it dead.
Exactly. It's not backed up by a good kick.
Yeah.
I just like how, like, one of the first times Reese passes it, the next guy just kicks it anyways.
So, well, you know, we know our role. We know what we're here to do.
It's like Reese has passed it and then gone, oh shit, I forgot. Kick it!
Mark Wyatt showing the kind of form, stealing the thunder from Gareth Reeves, or one day seeing break the world record for most penalties kicked in one match. And speaking of fly halves, right, Tony Ward almost scores a try, but, I mean, very much doesn't. For a player who, you know, had like a 15-year career and played for the British and Irish Lions and the Barbarians and so on, right, he never scored a try for Ireland or the Lions or the Barbars or any of that. I assume he must have scored one for Munster during his time, never scored a try for Ireland despite how much he played. And boy, do you see why when you see his attempt to finish.
I guess because they said like he like retires soon after this. So I guess, does he score in the next game? I don't know. I guess maybe do you guys like not watch ahead? I guess. I don't know. I didn't look. But like, yeah, it's crazy. Like when I was watching this, I was like, oh, that's crazy that he hasn't scored a try ever.
Yeah.
And I was like, that seems wild to me. But yeah, it was a weak attempt at the finish there. He looked kind of really excited for a very brief moment before he realized it was going to come back. So he looked elated. And I was like, I kind of felt bad that it got taken away from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not really. But
he is kind of best known for, he was the fly half when Munster famously beat the All Blacks. And he scored 2 drop goals in that game, which is the thing he's most famous for. And I do wonder, in him scoring 2 drop goals in that game and the way he played in the second half of this game in particular, whether he was Ireland's Gareth Rees.
Yeah, yeah, there is a lot of that to him.
Yes, but Gareth Rees seems better at it than him.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Until the last 10 minutes, out of nowhere. But we'll
when
get
he started
that.
Passing instead of drop kicking everything.
Yeah.
As we approach half time, I had written down in my notes, boy, I already can't wait for halftime, having heard Hans de Goody's team talk in the previous game and just how exhilarating that was and how many laughs that gave us. And then really frustratingly, after halftime is blown, it just goes straight to the coverage of the second half. We don't get to hear the Canadian team talk this time, which really upset me. But I guess we've had one fake Hans de Goody team talk, so...
Do you think they got really concerned and paranoid about how they gave away all their tactics?
Yeah, maybe so.
Which, to be fair, in that previous game were try and hurt the opposition.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. You're right, they've probably exposed themselves a little bit. Speaking of tactics, we have a semi-regular feature on here where we try and crack the team's line-out calls.
Yes,
did you crack the Canadians?
Very obvious.
Yeah, go on, talk us through it.
Well, they just call, at one point they called 21 and they throw it to 2. So
well, there is slightly more to it than that.
Okay.
So you've just, that's the USA's lineup course from earlier where they just throw it to the first one. So they will say 2 numbers. So for example, they could say 63-21. So on that one, they would throw it to 5 because it is the first digit minus the last digit is where they're throwing
it. That's a bit complicated.
It is.
It's a lot of mental math to do very quickly.
Right, for forwards. But yeah, that's what they had to do. And like, what I noticed was that Cardinal would call it and then just lob it in straight away. Like he's not giving us
time to think
about this at all. But then again, it doesn't fucking matter, does it? They're just all men who have to slap the ball back in the way of the halfback.
Derek, during your time as a proud second row, which you're absolutely tall enough to play in that position, did you ever have to do any like long division to work out a line-out call?
I don't remember. I don't think we would have been able to do it. knowing the guys that were on my team, I don't think we would have been able to figure that one out. I do remember though, like when I did start playing on that like high school team, the first like lineup calls that we did try were literally the same thing. We'd just yell out a bunch of numbers and be like, you're listening for the second number. And if you're just like,
sure.
Well, we didn't even use the jumpers because we weren't that smart. We used like your jersey number. So we were literally just calling straight up calling out jersey numbers. After a couple of games, we changed it to like a code of some sort based on something ridiculous, but it didn't. I don't think it really mattered all that much at the end of the day. Either.
No,
but I am familiar with the using random numbers to make your lineout call.
It's an excellent system that many teams have followed.
It's foolproof, especially when it's just 16 guys jumping at the ball. It's foolproof plan.
Speaking of 16 guys jumping in. There's one ruck at the start of the second half that Ireland take the ball into contact. And then all 8 Canadian forwards just pile in over the top and win the ball back. At which point, Grant Nisbet says that's simply good technique.
Yes. At one point, they basically do that. And Grant Nisbet calls it genius. He says it's genius to just get 8 fat lads to jump on a ball and see if they can win it.
It's great. It's so good to watch. Yeah.
It is genius. Like, it's working. That's what he's going with it. True.
I wonder if I just want to see someone try that nowadays. Just pile all it, because you would win the ball back if you pile all 8 forwards over a single ruck.
Like, I guess in a sense, it is genius to just get these big lads and the Bear from the Revenant to all jump on a ruck and try and win the ball. You know, if you've literally got Deadpool in your pack, then you probably stand a decent chance of winning the thing.
Just sending Colossus over the ball. And yeah, I mean, it leads to them getting the ball back. Shortly after this, Mark Wire off a scrum. I mean, Gaffrey's throws an unprecedented pass. And Mark Wire hits a hell of a line.
It's brilliant.
Absolutely splits the Irish team open. At this point, the score is 19-16 to Canada. Yes. And he goes straight... No, sorry, it's 13-16 to 12... What is it? It's 12-16. 13-16.
I think Canada are just ahead, aren't they?
You know, it's a tight game.
It's close. Yeah.
Wire absolutely splits them open and then shows that he can pass almost as well as Gareth Rees and tries to throw the wide ball to Tom Woods on the wing. But it does not make it.
No, it's a really poor pass, which is a shame because it's backing up a great line. And again, it's one of those where it's just like, oh, right, so you could have just done that the whole time and broken the line. And like, you can do that again if you want, Mark. You know, nothing's stopping you doing that again.
Is it Ireland just so lulled into a false sense of security by the fact they've kicked literally everything?
Yeah, that's what you do, right? You kick everything to make the defense relax. And then at the end of the game, now all the holes are open up because they're already turning around to go get the ball back.
Like, mentally scores
immediately after this anyways, though. So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, Woods kind of hacks it along, gets into the 22, Ireland put it out, the line out occurs. As you say, then out of nowhere... I wish there'd be some sort of Irish infringement. Ireland done something wrong in the lead up to this, so I could say it was a cardinal sin by Ireland to let this try be scored. But they don't, so it's a mock cardinal try instead of a cardinal sin, and it's a shame for everyone.
Yeah. The reference my head went to is I'm a big fan of the band The National, and they have a song called Cardinal Song, which I like to imagine is about Mark Cardinal, the former hooker for the Canadian rugby team.
It is. The
stadium actually played it when he scored too.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know if you heard it, but
yeah, I think they did. Even though it's like, in fact, they were probably born just about by the time this game happened. But yeah, they did play it canonically.
Mm. And I enjoyed their complete tribute album to this Canadian pack. A song for every member of the team.
Of course, it's Jamie Heaslip, and Jamie Heaslip's their manager, of course. As we discussed previously on this podcast, that they had a Jamie Heaslip and Sean O'Brien doing backing vocals on one of the songs, which is incredible because that's two-thirds of the Irish back row from 2011. Yes. So they were just lacking a Stephen Ferris playing drums or something. But
it's a real, real shame.
Yeah.
I think they should, much as they did the music for the recent Cyrano de Bergerac musical and then the movie based on the play.
Yes.
They should do a musical based on Mark Cardinal's life.
Yeah.
And this try is the only interesting point. He's probably had a lovely life, you know? His Wikipedia.
Oh my God, I just heard what you were about to say.
What?
Were you about to say that Mark Cardinal's the only good thing in his life was scoring this try?
No. I'm sure he had a lovely time. Look, he played for Canada in the 95 and 99 World Cups as well. He probably played
like six different sports for them.
Yeah. Look, I think he's a wonderful guy. Mark E. Cardinal, not to be confused with Mark E. Smith, or Marcus Smith. Both of them basically the same person.
Or anyone else called Mark?
Look, I'm just gonna move along. After Canada score, that makes it 19-16. Gareth Rees misses for the first time in the match, unless we count all of the drop goals he doesn't get.
Yeah, in which case he misses for the 50th time in the match.
Then Ireland, shortly afterwards, get a penalty about 40-odd metres out, and we watch a lot of goal-kicking in this World Cup and in the 2011 World Cup, and there's a lot of people trying kicks and missing from a long way out. And so when Michael Keenan puts the ball down to take a shot, I was not expecting good things. And yet... he steps up, nails it. It's suddenly 19-all with 10 minutes to go.
What a tight contest.
Yeah. This is going to finish so tight. It's such a good game. Like, this could go either way.
Yeah, you have to tell me what happens. So, like I said, I turned it off. So,
Gareth Rees kicks the ball 18,000 times and all of them go through the posts. And Canada win by 18,000 times free.
Wow, that's fantastic. So Rees, obviously man of the match, for all 18,000 of his points, and 18,000 times three, whatever that is. You said he made 18,000 drop goals, right? So like I said, I can't do the math. I was in the back, so I'm not trying to do 18,000 times three. But yeah, no, that's great. I can't believe Ireland lost that badly, though. That's shocking.
Yeah.
It's out of nowhere, really.
there's a part of me that's tempted to just not say anything else about the game. And that is just, in our cinematic universe, that is it. Yeah.
In our cinematic universe, Colossus is played by Ed Furst.
Yeah.
And Canada won this game.
By whatever 18,000 times 3 plus 19 is.
Yeah, it's still a world record to this day. To this day, yeah.
Look,
Ireland did score a few tries, but not enough to, you know, get anywhere near Gareth Rees's drop goals.
Yeah, no, I think they probably ended around like 46 points or something. I can see them a couple.
Ballpark.
Yeah, exactly. Canada left. They're having beers on the sideline before.
Yeah. Spraying the apple trees. Yeah.
The old joke.
Tony Ward still somehow didn't get a try, though, during that time. And it's unfortunate. But
the old joke about the rest of the team goes to the pub at halftime, one player remaining, then getting sent off for 10 minutes to go and conceding 3 points. You know, the old joke. It's that, you know. Ireland scored a couple of tries. Not very interesting.
despite the fact that we said earlier the narrative of like, oh yeah, this thing about the last 10 minutes of the game and Ireland scored another try. My general assessment is last 10 minutes just don't matter.
No. And it's like, oh
I
yeah.
Agree. I agree. It doesn't.
There was a little bit of me in that last 10 minutes when Ireland just start cutting, like, especially the last try. I kind of just went like, oh, well done. Okay. We get it. Fine, let's move on. Because by the time, so they look in this parallel universe where Ireland win this game, which didn't happen. Let's very quickly. So Crossan scores another try, which is again kind of bullshit. There's one slight slip up by Canada.
Yeah.
Then there's a drive over try from the scrum, which, you know, who cares? Tony Ward comes to life out of nowhere and suddenly
becomes world class. Like,
yeah, out of nowhere, a drop for 10 goal, minutes having been
sticks
not
the ball
good
in their half. Like, yeah, in this parallel universe, of course.
As you said, they drop a goal off a scrum 10 metres out when they're already 2 tries up.
I think he's taking the piss out of Gareth Rees.
It kind of felt a bit like that, didn't it? Like the teachers left the classroom again.
Yeah.
So they throw the rolled up ball of paper back at them. And then Ringland scores a try that I have written down twice either side of this, the words stupid try.
That's a good assessment, yeah.
It is a stupid try. Canada take a line out quickly from their own try line. They start trying to play it wide. Ireland intercept it, then do a bunch of stupid passes until it ends up in Ringland's hands and someone should tackle him, but no one does. And Earl goes absolutely mad talking about him as being the best winger he's ever seen.
Because he stepped the bear from the Revenant.
Yep. Then there's one more try on the final whistle. And all I've written in my notes is 15 try. Ridiculous. Hate this.
Yeah, I think that just makes sense. I just wrote for that, why are Canada shit now?
It comes completely out of nowhere.
We have a whole podcast dedicated to that question.
Yeah. So what is the full-time score? What have we decided is the full-time score?
So hold on. Let's do 18,000. Where's my phone? 18,000 times 3, which is 54,019 to 46.
Tough loss, so it's, Ireland. Tough loss.
Yeah, it's a hammering, you know. Unlucky Ireland is probably what we ought to say.
Yeah. I mean, really record margin. Wyatt's... I don't know how his record for kicking points was. He somehow broke a record there by only kicking 8.
Obviously, his 13 tries in the last 10 minutes helped elevate him to number 1 on the top athletes from Victoria list as well.
Nelly Furtado is going to write a song about
Mark,
him.
Mark
as
Cardinals,
the national
too,
covers.
By the way.
Yeah, Mark Cardinal, the best moment of his life. And that brings us, they blow the whistle after Ireland score their consolation try for Hugo McNeil, which is a really nice try, but I don't give a shit. Paul Collins does some very good work on it, who's the number 7. And Canada finish, very brave, brave heroes with a 54,019 to 46 win.
So should we do Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Let's.
Do you want to start on Man of the Match?
Let's start on, Man of the Match. So, I mean, Gareth Rees is the obvious standout, I think, both teams. I mentioned Pat Palmer, I think, has a very good game as well.
Yes.
But I think I kind of want to give a joint man of the match, but I'm going to tilt it a bit.
Because
I think so much of this game is decided, or a lot of it is, if not decided, then certainly a large part of his, a large contributing factor, is Roe Henderson and Hans de Goody, the 2 second rows, being so dominant at line-out time. And also, they kind of just smack everything in front of them very hard. And I'm a big fan of that.
Fair play.
I think Hans de Goody has the obvious captaincy angle, which is cool. And I'm sure he gave a very rousing team talk that only motivate them for 30 minutes. And if he could have given a 10% more motivating...
We're gonna spray all of these apple trees, 15,000 of them, and then we're going to score twice that on drop goals.
So I think for his effort from escaping the apple tree yard, and also he makes a break down the short side as well, which kind of swings it a bit, I think my man of the match is Roe Henderson.
Love that. Derek?
You know, if you're going to say Roe Henderson, I'm obviously going to go with Gareth Aris for the massive 18,000 times 3 points in the last 10 minutes, and as well as every single insane drop goal attempt from everywhere on the pitch, going full Kobe Bryant in this game. It's delightful.
I think that makes sense. I think that shout out to Michael Keenan, who was very, you know, was valiant in defeat. Typically, I think, though, with a record margin of victory, I can't really give it to a player from the losing team. So my man of the match, just to be different, because it was a great team effort by Canada, I'm going to give it to Mark Wyatt. I think that Gareth Rees was the best player on the pitch, and I said this in the last Canada game, but I'm still not giving him man of the match. I'm going to give it to Mark Wyatt instead, because he hit that line nicely, and he kicked it a lot better than I expected him to. So I'm going to give him a very patronising man of the match award.
Fair enough. I hugely respect that. Yeah. Should we go in reverse order and do Dick of the Day?
Sure, sure. I also can't believe that that two out of three of us have just ignored 30,000 points that Gareth Rees scored in this game. But yeah. So Dick of the Day. I mean, one of them has to be Michael Bradley for generally not playing very well. There was a point where he was just messing around in his own try line, and he basically surrendered the ball to a Canadian player. I think Tony Ward for a variety of different moments during the game where he was quite Dick of the Day-ish. But I've got to say, the Dick of the Day moment is whichever director cut out Hans de Goody's half-time speech. So this was uploaded onto YouTube by Juan Rugby, and I imagine it wasn't his fault. But whoever cut this together... Let's make up a name. Andrew, who cut this together.
Me?
Yes, Andrew. Andrew, the director, is my
the director. Andrew Dominique.
Andrew.
The director of the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Yeah, that's it. He's my dick of the day. He's my dick of the day.
I can't believe you'd do this.
Also the dick of the day for making that obnoxiously long movie title.
Yes. Look, you shouldn't need to pause halfway through a movie title to remember it.
No, exactly. I'm impressed you did remember it, actually.
Yeah, took a level of effort.
Also, it kind of gives away the whole movie in the title. Yes.
And also, like the characterization by the coward Robert Ford. Like, we know what he's like as well. There isn't even character development.
You don't even need to watch the movie at this point. It's it's there. It's, we know what happens. We know what you're going to feel about the characters at the end of it. It's just, it's done.
Yeah, it's pointless. Pointless. What are you doing? What are you doing, Andrew Dominique, other than trying to get your needlessly... I don't know if I've even heard about his Marilyn Monroe biopic.
No?
But he was hired by Netflix to make a Marilyn Monroe biopic, right? And he handed it in, and he had it like written into his contract with Netflix that he got final cut, and whatever he did as like his final version was the version that went out on Netflix. And
okay.
It's due to come out in like November, December, and it still isn't out. Because the version he put out was incredibly, incredibly graphic, and included like several really graphic sex scenes, including one whilst Marilyn Monroe was on a period. There's apparently incredibly like bloody and gory. And he has just like absolutely refused to back down on this and is absolutely just adamant that Netflix put out the version he made because they left that in his contract that he got what he wanted. So Netflix now just aren't putting the film out because if they put it out, it has to be his version.
Jesus Christ.
I'm sure there's more as well. I'm sure there's loads more details. And he keeps doing interviews just saying like, yeah, I don't care. You know, so rock and roll. I just did whatever I wanted with this Marilyn Monroe biopic because I was getting paid a bunch of money to just make up some bullshit about it.
Wild.
Yep.
Yeah, what a... Wow.
We're both lost for words.
That'll appear
I don't know. I don't know how to respond to that. Yeah,
that'll appear on Netflix one day.
Yeah.
So this Dick of the Day selection got super easy.
It's that guy.
Yeah, it's very clear.
Who is your Dick of the Day then, Derek?
I'm gonna back you and go with the director for cutting off the last 10 minutes of the game where Canada scored 54,000 points. So it's clear it's not only cut out Hans de Goody's speech, but like also the 54,000 points that Gareth Reese scored in the last 10 minutes. Because my video just went black at the 65th minute. So
it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic. Yeah. I'm following along not dissimilar lines and giving it to the stadium announcer who, after Michael Keenan, the Irish centre, kicks a goal. He announces it as being a penalty for the island, for Ireland's Nigel Kinnaman. Who, I've Googled Nigel Kinnaman. There doesn't seem to be a man called Nigel Kinnaman out there.
Like, in the world?
I can't find any man called Nigel Kinnaman. Please, if you're listening and you know someone called Nigel Kinnaman, let me know.
We'll get him on the podcast.
I can't find one. There doesn't seem to be any. You get results for Joel Kinnahan, and apparently when he's worked with people with Nigel, I'm not finding any so like, Nigel Kinnamans out there.
Nigel could have been the man of the match if he existed.
Yeah.
But no, he just straight up doesn't.
Maybe he was cut out by the TV director as well.
Maybe so.
If Ireland had him, they wouldn't have given up 54,000 points in the last 10 minutes of the game.
Oh, if only. What a loss Nigel Kinnaman was. Moments of silence for Nigel Kinnaman. And Derek, thank you for coming.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me on. It was a good time.
Yeah. Where can people find you? Where can people find your stuff? Where can people find the podcast? Please tell us everything.
Plug away.
Yeah. So podcast, it's called Le Rouge Rugby Podcast. We basically cover everything that is Canadian rugby, obviously including the Toronto Arrows and Major League Rugby as well, and all the Canadian players that are in Major League Rugby. Which, speaking of which, I think I said James O'Neill played for UBC earlier in the podcast, and it's really been bugging me because he played for UVic. So I think I slipped on that one. So I know before people start like yelling at me for saying he played for the wrong school, but
good save.
Yeah, exactly. I'm attempting that. So yeah, Le Rouge Rugby, you can find it on like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, any podcast platform. You can follow it. All social media is just at Le Rouge Rugby on every platform that you can think of. For just myself personally, I'm at Brissette the Jet on all social media as well. So Brissette, Brissette, and then the Jet is spelt how you think the Jet would be spelt at the end of that. And yeah, just you know, follow along, listen to the podcast, let us know what you guys think. We're always open to suggestions and some criticism and stuff. So it's a lot of fun. So, you know, Arrows are riding a 2-game winning streak right now too. Mm-hmm. So it's we're doing happy podcasts at the moment. It's not all not all 2021 episodes there.
As we said before, before we started recording, like I've listened to the podcast, I've follow a lot of your stuff on social media, both the podcast and yourself. And in terms of just broadening your horizons to, you know, what's going on in the Arrows and, you know, the kind of wider Canadian rugby, it's a really good source. And really, like, I think the kind of enthusiasm really shines through as well. There's a real, like, joy in it, even though, as you say,
I'll second that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys giving it a listen. We enjoy your podcast and all the videos and stuff that you make too, especially the Canadian ones. Those attack breakdowns are always interesting, but it's always a good time listening to you guys. This retrospective thing gets me through some long days of work too. So
that's lovely to hear. Well, yeah, no, thank you for coming on, and you've been a very, you know, as we expected from having heard your stuff before, a very positive voice to bring to Canadian rugby, which is something that's hard to find sometimes. So
it's a lot easier when you're winning by 54,000 points.
Very true. But yeah, no, thanks again for coming on, man. Really, really appreciated.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun.
thank you for Derek for joining us. Thank you, William, as ever. And thank you for listening. Please join us next week when the game will be Scotland 60, Zimbabwe 21.
Yes. And we have a special guest joining us for that.
This is a game when we were looking through all the matches in this World Cup that stood out immediately. And I think we knew instantly which guests from our kind of short list to pair with it. So please join us then for that next week. We'll see you then. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.